Racing, all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half. At the Races. We're waiting for Dave Groening to emerge from the elevator, and this is not as dangerous as the elevator at Pimlico. It's a little more reliable. So it's not like we have to worry that Dave's going to end up, you know, not making it. I have to worry, though, somehow one of the cats has gotten upstairs, and it's unbelievable lucky. I don't know. I can't let you out now. Now you're stuck in here till noon. So the cats have figured out, at least this cat has figured out, of the four, he has figured out how to get through the living room, the door in the living room, which is very clever of him, but I'm
good.
Oh, there's Dave Groening now. Oh, good. My cat just provided enough of a distraction.
They're good for something, those cats.
Well, we got four of them, and at this time of year, they're good for keeping the mice out of from moving in for the winter. That's one of the strengths. The mice, you know, the mice will send an advance party, and if the mouse doesn't come back to report, they know to go look for another house. So we have.
They're just looking for Christmas balls to play with anyway.
Well, they're in trouble. The squirrels are in trouble around here. I got the one kitten that showed up on our doorstep, and he's a serial killer. It's unbelievable. I'm not kidding. I mean, he took part of the summer off, but then he resumed the slaughter of squirrels. And Tina like roots him on. Good boy, good boy. It's like, stop. This is creepy. Dave, I told everybody how this is traditionally your big farewell visit of the year, where you tell me at the end, we'll see you in April.
That's exactly right. I was just thinking that. I was like, I have to make sure I get, you know, I have to make sure I wish you and your listeners happy holidays and happy new year. And, you know, I don't know when Easter is next year. Maybe we'll talk before. I'm not sure. But, save time at the end for, you know, a holiday greeting.
I love it. Well,
fond farewell.
I talked to Marcus earlier, and he made reference, even though he didn't use the Cigar Mile as a, or the two-year-old races, he did make reference to them as part of the game plan discussions. And, you know, the Cigar Mile took a hit here with between the EHV1 issue with Obesos not being able to leave Churchill, and then, of course, Baby Yoda took sick. And so suddenly a field of eight that was okay comes down to a field of six, which is what it is.
Yeah, and then, you know, Mother Nature could further dent things, because Mind Control just doesn't like a wet track, and I don't know what they would do if it's a sloppy track tomorrow. You know, I know they've said this is the last hurrah, so if it is indeed the last hurrah, they might just run and roll the dice, but they could also say, why waste the race and maybe try for something at, you know, somewhere else. Gulfstream has a sprint, I think, and, you know, but obviously it's not a grade one, so they're going to have some decisions to make potentially if the weather forecast is correct. The race didn't come up as strong as you would like it to have. But there's still some interest, because a horse like Zandon and even a horse like White of Barrio, three-year-olds that, you know, showed some promise during the course of the year and could be for better or for worse, the future of our older male division next year, because we've lost so many horses. So you'd like to see those horses perform well. And I guess the knock on White of Barrio would be that he's won at Gulfstream, not necessarily anywhere else. But the you know, I'm interested in Zandon for multiple reasons. I think this is a very, I think this is a good horse. I think he's proven that he doesn't want a mile and a quarter, or won't be as effective at a mile and a quarter as, you know, I'm sure they hoped he would be. But a mile and eighth is probably his best distance, but I don't see really, I really don't see why he shouldn't be able to, get a mile. His only one turn race, which was a three quarter race, was, solid enough, and he won it, maiden race. So I think the race goes for him. He has a win on a good, air quotes, good track at Keeneland in the Bluegrass, a grade one. I think he can lay closer if he needs to. I just think it kind of, I think all, for me, all signs point to him.
It feels like it, depending on what happens with mind control. Certainly got to bring up Peter Miller and get her number. Hasn't, you know, gone a flat mile on the dirt, but has done lots of different things in his career, and you know, has got tactical speed. I thought Get Her Number was worth at least mentioning. Norm Cash becoming a favorite of the racing office with the entering both Outlier and Double Crown.
Yeah, he'll definitely be a favorite for the racing office no matter where he goes, and I know he's going to have some stalls here this winter. For shipping in, you know, if they actually ship, you know, if there's actually even time to ship out and ship back, because he runs his horses so frequently. But, I think he was a fortunate winner. I think Double Crown was a fortunate winner of the Kelso, in trip and in competition. Baby Yoda had won his race at a mile, that allowance race previous. I don't know that he's a stakes horse at a mile. And for all the accolades that Baby Yoda may get, he's still not a stakes winner. He'll go down in history for his, 114 buyer figure, which seems to be an anomaly to me, beating Olympiad in a couple of summers ago. So I think Double Crown and obviously Outlier, who looks to be an outlier in this race, are going to be in a little bit of the deep water, literally, figuratively, tomorrow. I think it's really Zan. Get Her Number, as you know, is sort of the wild card to me, because I don't know how good he is. I don't know how good he is at a mile, and C, I don't know how good he is in the slop. He ran once in the sloppy track, and he clipped heels, and I believe, you know, either eased or lost his rider at the Texas Derby back in 21. So I don't know if he was doing any running in that race at all. The chart doesn't look at like it. He was. So it's also has the feel to me as a late minute decision. His horse ran on November 20th. I don't necessarily think he was running in that race, particularly pointing for this race, but here he is. So, and you know, he might turn out to be okay, because, you know, if let's say Mind Control runs or doesn't run and or runs and doesn't like the sloppy track. And if we're right, or if I'm right, that Double Crown and Outlier are, in over their heads here. Then basically he's just got to beat a couple 3-year-olds in Zandon and White of Barrio, and he could get a big piece of it. So I'm not discounting Get Her Number, but I don't go in there with a strong feeling either way on Get Her Number. Just thinking it has the look of a last minute decision.
Let's move quickly backwards through the stakes sequence and the pick five, obviously, with the four stakes plus the nightcap. But the Gopher Wand, you got a nice bulky field in here, the one turn mile, and some interesting things happening in this race.
Yeah, I don't think anybody thought they were getting 11. And I actually thought the Banks thing was, entering this race as a insurance policy in case she was nominated to both of the Stallion Stakes races here on Sunday in case those races didn't fill, and they both filled. And she's, I had a text exchange with John Terranova, and he's planning to run her here, obviously, because he didn't even enter the Stallion Stakes. So, and she's interesting. She likes Aqueduct 6 for 8. She likes a mile 3 for 5, and she likes a wet track 4 for 7. And, she was second to November Rain, in the Iroquois, coming off a bit of about a 4-month layoff. So she's going second off the layoff, stretching back out to a mile. But, the last time she ran in a slot in a wet track going a mile was at the was in the Ruffian at Belmont, which was a pretty solid little field. Search results, Royal Flag, Lady Rocket, you know, I don't necessarily think she liked that particular track or that particular competition. This is a little bit softer competition, but and I think she could get a potentially good track, a good setup. There's a lot of pace in the race to me, which is why I'm a little bit against, after looking at it a second, third, and fourth time, Battle Bling, who looks like she has gotten better with a more forward position type of running style. And I think she's going to have some company up there. Love in the Air, I think, is going to need to scoot away there from the rail. And she was in good form. She beat a more heralded and shorter price stablemate leader of the band in the Plum Pretty Stakes on Pennsylvania Derby Day at Parks. So I think this race could potentially set up pretty well for Banks Thing. And the only horse I'm not sure if she's going to run is Betsy Blue. Linda Rice asked her yesterday about that. She's like, you know, she was thinking about the Garland Roses, and she was looking at, you know, maybe this, she thought maybe this could be a good opportunity to get graded black type. And it could be, but I don't think she was expecting an 11 horse field, but she too likes a wet track. So maybe that'll counteract that. So I don't know what Linda's going to do. If I had a bet, I would bet she would come out, but you know, I'm kind of leaning a little bit toward Banks Thing with the, you know, seems like a show of confidence that they decided to run it here when they had a softer spot available to them the next day.
Marcus landing on Banks Thing as well. Let's talk about the two-year-olds, which in a lot of ways is the most intriguing pair of races, just because, as always, Dave, that mile and an eighth, the mile and the eighth differential, and you know, these horses stretching out to 9 furlongs, and it can be a divider. And let's go with the Remsen first.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is going to produce the Bluegrass winner and the Belmont winner like it did last year when Mo Donegal beat Vanden in a thrilling finish there that could have gone either way when it once it hit the steward stand. We have 7 in here. I guess I'm not sure if, you know, Linda's again a little bit on the fence. She, when talking to her earlier in the week with Arctic Arrogance, she was thinking that maybe a mile and eighth on December 3rd might be a little bit too much for this horse at this point. She thinks eventually he'll stretch out, but maybe not right now. But then when you look at the field, it's not that deep. This Tuskegee Airman will probably be the favorite, coming off his 2 wins. And you know, it was funny watching the replay of the Rocky Run. You could hear that even the track announcer, like, this horse is in deep water. And he looked like he was going nowhere. And all of a sudden he got his mind back on running and he finished the race. And, you know, it's funny. I mentioned that to Service, John Service, yesterday when I was talking to him. I said, boy, I watched the race. I didn't think he would win. The track announcer didn't think he could win. And then he interjected. The trainer certainly didn't think he was going to win. This is the way things were setting up. So, you know, this is a horse that seems like once he gets his mind on his business, a little bit of a cough here, sorry. Once he gets his mind on what he's doing, you know, he could be a pretty nice little horse. And we'll see if that is tomorrow or not. But, you know, the rest of the field is kind of light. Midnight Trouble goes for New Connections. He was second to Tuskegee Airman, but a well-beaten second. I think the horse that the one horse to me, I guess, that's the most intriguing is the outsider, W&L for Danny Gargan, coming off a win in the slop. It was an off-the-turf race, I get it, but I think that number is light. You know, he had another horse win on the card with a similar time and got a much better number later on the card, and I guess the explanation was that the track got, you know, faster as the day or slower. I don't know what the explanation was. It just, I don't think that 66 is accurate. I think it's a better number than that. First time out, he ran against Instant Coffee, was fourth to that horse on debut. Instant Coffee obviously won the Kentucky Jockey Club. I think this Good Magic is producing route horses. So I think W&L is intriguing in here. I'd be curious to see the price on that horse. I know they're going to bet Tuskegee Airman. And I guess the other horse that's a bit interesting is the Florida Shipper for Antonio Sano, Il Miracolo. You know, he was second to a horse called Mr. Ripple, Savvy Joseph horse, who was supposed to come here but got sick. And then he came out of that race and won a one-turn-mile maiden race on November 12th. Again, it has the feel for me as a last-minute decision, but when you look at the race and you look at the pedigree, Gunrunner out of the Tappet Mare, he hasn't run on a wet track, but it looks like, you know, there's pedigree there to handle the wet track and there's pedigree to get the distance. So you know, I know Tuskegee Airmen is a deserving, will be the favorite. I would include him on multiple race wagers. You mentioned the pick five, but I would also throw in WNL and Il Miracolo, and I would probably play the race, probably put a win bet on one of those two, depending on the odds.
The girls have a heavy favorite. What's going to be a heavy favorite in Julia Shining? And, you know, certainly, I mean, it's never easy stretching seven furlongs to nine. She happens to be bred to do it, undoubtedly, being by Curlin and out of Dreaming of Julia. But she still has to go and do it. She's interesting, too, because she won from, you know, well off the pace in that debut at Keeneland. And so the question becomes, is there enough pace for her to, you know, run down the leaders? And so let's go shopping for a potential speed horse. And I don't know. Where's it coming from exactly? Tribal Queen, Tony Dutrow on the outside?
No, I actually think Tony's going to scratch. He was another one I talked to earlier in the week, and he was like thinking I would look, you know, I would run if I thought I could get black type. And I think I translated that to mean if it's a five horse field and I only have to beat two horses to be third. So if Tony scratches, I think the speed of the race is sitting right on the fence there in Foggy Night.
Okay.
Who already won a two turn race at Parks. Granted, it was a maiden race at Parks, but she won it by 11 plus. She was on the lead. I think, you know, not necessarily the, you know, the best of trips. She was a pressing three wide course, and she fought on when Good Sam came to her. She initially fought, but Good Sam was just better than her that day, and she was a clear second. She was better than the other four in the race and was a clear second. So I think getting back to two turns, I think being parked right there on the fence, I think Paco's going to hustle her. And if Tony does scratch with Tribal Queen, I think he's going to hustle her away from there and make Julie Shining try to catch her. And I think the key to Julie Shining is getting a clean trip. It doesn't matter. You know, she can run. You know, obviously, she's a full to Malifaz, so she can run all day. And as far as they write them, the reason she was so far back in that debut was the kickback. She resented the kickback of dirt, of dry dirt. Now she's probably going to get wet dirt being thrown at her. So I'm sure Luis Saez will be instructed to get away from there and get to the outside and you know, get a clean face. And if she's as talented as she seems to be and as talented as her older sister, she'll probably win. But she's going to have to run down a decent, more experienced filly in Foggy Night. You know, Todd's won this race seven times the last 2 years with Best and Malifat, who each had the same profile, maiden, tempted, Demoiselle. Well, this filly just has a maiden. So I do think experience counts to some degree. And, you know, but this filly does look to be ultra talented. And if she is, she'll win on talent. If she's not, she'll run second to Foggy Night.
There it is. That's the Demoiselle and the Remsen, the Gopher Wand, and the Cigar Mile, the last of the biggest stakes action in New York, although there's plenty between now and New Year's, including some state bred stuff and Queens County and the Gravesend toward New Year's Eve. Dave, have a nice holiday season as things wind down, and we'll talk to you in April.
Talk to you in April. I hope your listeners, you, your Tina, the cats, and if there are any mice that get through, plus your listeners, I hope they all have a happy holiday. And we'll talk in April.
We'll talk before that because, of course, we've got some plenty of good stuff, including Gotham Day and. There's lots. But this is a running joke. Dave Grenning, everybody. Talk to you after the first, probably.
All right, Steve. Take care.
Dave Grenning, folks. Stay in here, of course, and we'll turn and bring in Scully. James got just enough time, I think, to give us his plays. Then Nick Tamaro, Hammer, and Seth Merrow over this last hour. And I don't know, hour and looks like 2 minutes. James Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
James, of course, joins us on the heels of structuring a play for people last week involving the Amos filly that was going to be super short, 1-2, And one of the two horses that James talked about scratched, but able to take the other one, the turf horse, that did get up for second. That was, you know, very well executed, James. So thanks to you for that. A lot of people played that $20 exacta the way you laid it out.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. Yeah, that, you know, it's all based on circumstance. We have a situation that is Demoiselle with another odds on favor, but I think, you know, I think both Royal Spa and Foggy Knight, who are the second and third choice on the morning line, are most likely to run second in there. So not chasing after small paying exactas. The $20 exacta Hoosier Philly Knock Your Socks Off returned on that $20 wager $368, wound up turning a $348 profit. You know, it's just all a matter of whether or not you feel like horses like Pretty Mischievous and American Rockette, who are the second and third choices in the Goldenrod, are vulnerable or not. I did, and therefore I bet the odds on favorite in the straight exactas. In the Demoiselle, I think Julia Shining is going to win, but I'm not going to be playing any vertical exotics in there because I think it could be very well chalky.
All right. What else? You want to stay in New York? What else you want to do in New York?
I'll start in New York. I'll mention the other two stakes, but I'll start off with race number five tomorrow, the last race in the pick five sequence, early pick five sequence. I'm not keen on the favorites in here. The Lynn Cash entry, Hero Tiger, who just got up to, you know, won that last race in the slop. Bourbonic looks like he's just getting a race back at 7 furlongs. I really like number four, American Gentleman. This was a horse that last year, four-year-old gelding, that last year was banging around in claiming events at the end of the year. He came back. He got rose up in class, recorded a couple decent seconds at Aqueduct against entry-level allowance rivals earlier this year. And I think when he got freshened in May, he has really come back a better horse since then, and especially his last two starts. His first race back, he caught a good track there at Saratoga. You know, was in contention until late, tired a little bit to be fifth. And then he's come back in his last two starts. He ran third, I thought a good third. And then he came back last time, on November 5th, and I thought beat a good field. That horse that was third in there, Life Changer, came back just to miss last Saturday in a pretty good allowance at short odds, finishing a neck second. And I thought that American Gentleman is just making progress for Gustavo Rodriguez and gets a very winnable spot here. So at 9-2, I'm going to be looking to play him in race five.
Very good. American Gentleman, the four in the fifth.
And then in the Remsen, you know, I mean, to me, I mean, looking at this race, you know, Arctic Arrogance is a threat, I think, to get out and just lead wire to wire on the front end. But if he comes up, you know, he's never been two turns before. If he catches a little pressure from perhaps Midnight Trouble or Quick to Accuse or somebody else, I think the race gets set up for number seven, WNL. And this is a Danny Gargan colt that in his first race at Saratoga ran fourth to Instant Coffee, who won the Kentucky Jockey Club last weekend, just sort of an even effort that day. And then came back last time, and I thought that was a good turn of foot. Beat a horse cold and conversing and into mischief cold for Suge McGahee that could be okay moving forward. And, you know, I just think this is a colt with some upside, could, you know, perhaps, you know, be stakes quality. And I think it's a very suspect field in the Remsen. I'm not keen on some of these horses going this mile and eighth distance. And, you know, so I'll take a little shot with WNL.
All right.
And then in the Cigar Mile, I think Zandon is probably set for a good race. My real take in there a little bit. I look at Mind Control, and I think Ired Ortiz Jr. is going to show speed on Wide Barrio, and I'm just a little bit concerned that Mind Control isn't in the same form he was in this summer, especially, you know, when he ran in that Salvatore Mile. I didn't think he was going by Farmo Power, regardless of them brushing in the stretch last time. I thought that horse had reasserted command late in that Parks race. And, you know, so I'm going to try to beat him in there. And I'm going to use Zandon who I do think the cutback to a one-turn mile, and, you know, looks like Chad Brown's been pointing into this race ever since he ran a good second in the Penn Derby. It sort of fits in there. But the other horse I'll use that wouldn't mind seeing Beat Zand in his getter number, this is a colt that this summer when he finally sort of, you know, when he started turning things around, he ran third and going turf to dirt in the Triple Bend, and then he gutted out a nice allowance win, beat a solid field at Churchill Downs in late June, and off of that effort I thought he came back and ran really well to be second in the Bing Crosby. He got a little time off after the Pat O'Brien and came back last time, and once again, I mean, that's a really solid effort. I think it's easy to take for granted. Ginobili, you know, he likes Del Mar. He was second in the Dirt Mile last year, a multiple graded stakes winner. Getter number beat Ginobili, and Forbidden Kingdom had been off form in his last two starts, but I thought he ran a good race for Mandela that day. So seeing Getter number record this, like, you know, hard fought narrow winning allowance and come back and run well in his next start in Stakes Company, and I think he could be set for a good showing for Peter Miller.
I agree, and you know, Dave just, you know, mentioned that it was kind of a late decision and so forth, but he's a versatile. He's proven versatile, and this feels like a clever move, actually.
Yes. And then I got a few plays for Del Mar
tomorrow. All right.
I will start off in this Stormy Liberal Stakes race number 5. I like on this Turn on the Jets number. 7 for Phil D'Amato.
Yep.
You know, this is a gelding that, you know, once they got him over from England in his first race, you know, he ran a good race to win, I thought, at Del Mar, but I just love the improved speed he's shown in his last two races. I know there's some other speed in there with Hot Box and others, but I'm just expecting a favorable trip up front and for him to run a big race there. Phil D'Amato is just so good with these turf horses. And, you know, we saw Hong Kong Harry win a terrific edition of that Seabiscuit Stakes here recently. And I'm going to look to play a Turn on the Jets. You know, 5-1 on the morning line, it's not a bad price in that 10-horse field.
That's who I brought up with earlier with Brad Frey. I agree.
Yeah, and And then Jimmy Durante, you know, once again, I'm going with a foreign bred horse for Phil D'Amato. This number 9, the best is yet to be. I thought that his last effort was a really good improvement upon his U.S. debut, where he just got off slowly and never really fired. In last time out, he didn't get away from the gate real well, but he immediately recovered and just missed. And I look for him to keep moving forward off that effort. This is a pretty tough race. I can see why Flavian Pratt stuck with the Chad Brown horse, but, you know, I think he could be looking up at the horse he was on last time at the finish line.
Hmm.
And then in the Hollywood Derby, you know, my take on there is with Wit. I mean, once again, Wit's the kind of horse that wouldn't surprise me, but I'm just like, you know, he was a one-turn sprinter, middle distance type horse on dirt. He's running 3 straight times at a mile on turf, and now he stretches to a mile and an eighth. And I just wasn't keen on that Bryan Station the way he gave up the lead late in that race. I'm going to let him beat me. The horse I like in here, Steve, I mean, I'm pretty keen on him, is number 2 Script. And believe me, a lot of it's just like based on potential and upside. But to me, you go back and you watch these two races, his race at Keeneland and then this Let It Ride Stakes, and there's a point on the far turn, maybe even the upper stretch, where you can be like following him and he's not going to get anything. I mean, he's going to be mid-pack at best. And once John V tips him outside of horses in both races, he just finishes up like, I mean, just a powerful turn of foot. And to me, he's still just figuring it out for Grand Motion. Those are two excellent efforts to build upon. That pace last time in that Let It Ride was dawdling, and Script is back there running in next to last. I thought Handy Dandy just sort of got the jump on him, but I thought Script had a lot more upside coming out of that race, and I think the price is going to be right in a full field. He's 8-1 on the morning line, so I'm going to bet Script in the Hollywood Derby, Steve.
We brought up Motion's assault on this race with three of them in here.
Yeah.
Big time. And he's targeted this. And, of course, Shug shows up here as well. With Celestial City, and I think Brad and I spent the most time talking about the maiden, about Spycatcher. So
yeah,
it's a fun race.
You know, the thing about that Let It Ride was John Velasquez, you know, was up on, you know, was on him that day too, as well as at Keeneland. But I understand why he took Mind Control. It's, you know, it's Sol Kumin and Pletcher in his final career race and trying to go out with a win there. So not too worried about the jock switch there. I do have a last-second Friday play for you today, Steve.
Outstanding.
At Aqueduct.
Aqueduct, all right.
Yeah, at Aqueduct. In the nightcap, I'm going to take a double shot with the Son of Bourbon Courage. Number five, double shot. This is a horse double shot that, to me, has been facing open rivals. I thought he won his last race, you know, when he was in against State Bred Foes at this $25,000 when he was level, claiming level. He won that race by open lengths back in May. He's a two-time winner this season. And I just think that dropping back into the State Bred company, it looks like he's stepping up from, like, $12,500 and $16,000 claimers, but those are open rivals he's facing. And I think, you know, obviously he's been popular at the claim box, three straight claims, and I think he's found the right spot to return to the winner's circle today. So 8-1 on the morning line, number five double shot in the finale at Aqueduct today.
Well, and does get as many as 7 pounds from some rivals with Gomez. And interesting, and of course those 7-pounders, those 7-pound bugs involved in this too. But there's some hard hitters in here. Quick Return and Gandhi Dancing, Gemography, Durkin's Call. It's a good spot for an 8-1 shot.
Yeah, he's been running against Durkin's Call,
yeah.
So he knows that rival well. But that's who I would pick second, is Durkin's Call, well drawn on the outside. All right, Steve. Well, you have a great weekend. Best of luck to you,
James. Thanks a lot. Talk to you next week from Los Al.
All right, sounds good.
James Scully, everybody, and there's the LSFP, the last second Friday push. We're going to turn to Nick Tamaro, get Nick in here, and he will expand on more of the Aqueduct action and see if there's any alternates. I mean, it feels like a lot of people landing on the same kinds of horses for the particularly in the Gopher Wand, where, you know, you have an 11-horse field and everybody's picking Banksting. Nick Tamaro, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. Let me reach for the New York, bring the New York back up on top of the stack here. All right. What I'm trying to think. What last week? Was there anything clever from last week to review?
No, I don't think anything particularly noteworthy, just, you know, everything that comes with the end of turf season, which, you know, probably went on a week or so shorter than they would have hoped. That had a lot to do with the Belmont at Aqueduct meet, and so we'll probably be in a similar situation in 2023. But I thought the Cumley win for 63 caliber for Tom Amos, she's really come to hand pretty quickly. I was surprised by the race that she ran in that Seneca at Churchill, and then she backed it up pretty well. I was also surprised that was the comeback spot that Shook chose for Kathleen O. And I mean, maybe I'm, and I will readily admit, and I've embarrassed myself speaking to you on this show, questioning distance decisions by Shook. First Captain comes to mind, but I kind of felt like Kathleen O wants to go shorter. But she ran well, all things considered, and I think the mile and an eighth off the long break is tougher than you might initially think. So be interesting to see where she ends up early in 2023. He said she's gonna stay in training continuously, having had this time off this year. But yeah, hopefully 63 caliber makes her way down to Houston for the Houston Ladies Classic, which will still take place, and just might end up getting simulcasted depending on how the next month or so goes. But I think those were the only performances that kind of stuck out in my mind as far as anything particularly noteworthy. I'll admit I bet on Astronaut. That's kind of a red board. So in the Red Smith, he wired the field. You know, it doesn't come into play for another 11 months or so, but these late season turf races generally have a randomness factor that you have to do everything you can to put a little bit of it into your handicapping process. And he just felt like a horse that had been close to a hot pace the time before with an aggressive rider in a paceless race. So just one of those situations that came together well.
There you go. All right. Well, we've got four graded stakes, the last big open company stakes slate of the season, the tail end of Holiday Fest, the fest formerly known as Holiday Fest. Start with the Cigar Mile, Nick, and we'll work our way backward.
Now it's just the Festivus for the rest of us, right?
Hey now.
Hey now, Hank Kingsley. The Cigar is, it's kind of a good bad race, right? It's not a particularly good field, but it's kind of interesting because you're going to have Zandon as a pretty short favorite in a race where, I mean, he is giving up a pretty massive pace advantage, and it is going to be a requirement for Joel Rosario to keep him far more involved early. The funny thing about Zandon, and you don't often get this with a horse that's run eight times, and granted, admittedly, he's run well just about every single time. I really don't know what his style is, Steve. Mm. You know, I really don't know what he is, and I think Pratt kind of reinvented him in the bluegrass as this one run closer. And I don't know if that's how he's ever going to be most effective. The problem is if Pratt did that, isn't Rosario likely to just continue to do the same thing, right? This is really Rosario's comfort zone, is taking horses back to let them make one run. So, you know, I become a little concerned that maybe he gives up a little too much ground to horses like White Abario and Mind Control, who both have significantly more speed, and they're both decent. You know, they're not bad horses. They're very solid at this stage of their respective careers. So, you know, at this point, I think I'm tentatively going to pick Mind Control. I just feel like he's going to be in the right place. I think he's going to be close to the pace. I think he'll either be setting the pace or stalking right outside White Abario. And, you know, the one turn mile, though his miles the last couple of years where he's been most effective have been around two turns. I think the mile is probably absolutely his best distance. And the one thing about this horse is that you don't want to get into a dogfight with him. If you do, he's probably going to try and find a way to beat you. And so I'm going to land there. And in Todd, I trust, having won this race five times, I think he'll certainly have the recipe together, because, you know, other than him and Zandon, I really just don't know who else can win. I don't, you know, I think there's a world in which White Abario could wire this field. I just don't think Mind Control will allow him to have that kind of trip that would really help him get to that spot.
Well, you know, Dave dropped the modifier on us that wet weather could get Mind Control out of this field.
Oh, has he not run well on wet tracks? I always find it sort of funny when people scratch for that. I mean, he's a six-year-old horse who's getting retired. I don't know why you'd scratch, but hey, I mean, I guess it's supposed to rain like a quarter of an inch. So, I mean, it's not going to be some kind of deluge. But, well, I hope that's not the case. I mean, if it is, it becomes an even less interesting race, which is unfortunate. And I think at that point, Zandon will probably just win over White Abario and get her number. Unless the Lynn Cash Express has one more stop.
Well, get her number to me is the fun horse. I mean, with or without Mind Control.
I'll tell you one thing about this horse, and I've been following the Del Mar racing a lot more closely than I have really any Southern California meet in a while. This horse got bet hard last time from the start and ran well. I wonder if there's a little bit of a LASIK situation. That being said, he did not run poorly in the Bing Crosby. He did not get much of a pace set up that day. He did not get any pace set up at all in the Pat O'Brien. So I think there are legitimate excuses. It seems like a pretty cagey move by a pretty, you know, a pretty sharp trainer to run him here on this kind of turnaround. So I guess to sum it up, it would be foolish to be beaten by this horse.
Well, I agree. And Gary Barber, after a kind of a, for him, a middling year, Barber suddenly winning, you know, with all his different associations. So I like this. And I, you know, at 4-1, it was certainly, you know, in that 7-2, probably, I thought was, you know, an option.
Yeah, I think there's no argument with that. I think he'll end up being the right price, especially if for some reason you do have that scratch of Mind Control.
Let's talk about the Gopher Wand, where they ended up with a much larger field than the racing office expected. They came out of the woodwork for this.
The Gopher Wand has a bigger field than the SHU-V and Ogden Phipps combined. and with two horses to spare, but you know, it's perfect for a grade three race, right? It's full of grade three horses, horses that have been good enough at various times to jump forward with better efforts, horses that probably still have something to prove, or those that are trying to regain some past glory. I mean, I can understand why anybody would be inclined to land on a horse like Banksting, because she is the most consistent in a race loaded with horses that are not particularly consistent. I got to tell you, Steve, she was awful last time. I mean, it's not as if she ran okay. I mean, she was 2-1 in a race where she should have been the favorite, and she had no excuse whatsoever after getting a little bulky at the gate. She had dead aim on November rain turning for home, and just in a very laborious type of stretch run, she'd never really gained all that much ground. So I'd be very hesitant. The other concern that I have about this horse is that throughout the summer, you saw John Terranova working some of his good young horses with Banksting, and she never ran. You know, I don't know what was going on. I don't know whether he had something in mind and maybe she had some little setbacks or what, but to come back with that kind of effort after a summer where she was busy in the mornings, it does make me a little nervous. Bessie Blue's the horse who ended up going off the favorite in there, and she didn't run particularly well either. I wonder if she might be a horse that is not as successful without Lasix. I like Dr. B. I don't have anything clever. I think Butch Reed is always, he's a guy who always ships with intent. I hate that Irad is riding, because we're going to get about half the price we would if just about anybody else in the colony was riding this horse. But she seems like the right horse. I think the mile won't be a problem. She'll probably be in a good tactical position to get the jump on some of the deeper closers. And I wonder if Battle Bling might be getting a little long in the tooth so far, having had a busy 2022. She did run well last time out. Nostalgia came back and ran really, really bad last week, which was a little surprising. I don't know what kind of gauge that is on Battle Bling, but I'll tell you the other horse that I'm going to use for sure is the California Invader Sharapova, who admittedly ran poorly in the Santa Margarita all the way back in April, but she comes back here off the layoff for Peter Erden and ran into Blue Stripe that day. Miss Bigley also is a horse who had a very good first half of the year. I don't want to hold that against her. Fun race.
Somebody is dirtied up in here that could pick off a minor award, and that's Exotic West for Gary and for Louis Laz. She is nearly perfect. She's perfect at the mile, and she's nearly perfect at Aqueduct.
Yeah, I think that she makes a ton of sense. And look, if she gets back to the top flight effort and some of those, you know, late 2021, early 2022 performances, she's right in the conversation, and she's going to be a nice big price too.
Yeah, gets Dylan Davis back aboard, and she's all muddied up at 20-1. Let's talk about the 2-year-olds and the Remsen. To me, this race and the Demoiselle, always the same. You know, it's always the same conversation. Who is going to excel at 9 furlongs? Because there's no guarantee that winners at a mile are going to do that.
Correct. That's a big worry. And it seems like there are a couple in here that do make you a little skeptical. WNL, for example, is by good magic, obviously, out of Wild Gams, who was a very sprint-oriented dam. And the good horse that she produced, whose name escapes me right now, I think was a little more sprinty, too. That's a horse that looked like he was really hitting his stride at the mile. And so you're inclined to think, oh, this horse is going to get even better at two turns. The best horse that she produced so far is Casadero, who, of course, was a sprinter on both turf and dirt. So there's a great example of what you're talking about. After the Bertram Bongard, I was concerned that Arctic Arrogance was maybe a horse that just got a little lucky in his debut. He came back and he ran extremely well on the Sleepy Hollow. And I think this is a very simple, conversation for the connections. He's supposed to go straight to the front. And if you're going to lose this race, it's because somebody runs you down. If Tuskegee Airmen ends up running him down, that's a risk that you take. I think Tuskegee Airmen is very, very good. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up winning this race. I hope he stays together well as a three-year-old. We've seen the Pennsylvania and Mid-Atlantic connections do well in this race in the past. It's between those two to me, Steve. I didn't have anything clever amongst those two. I think if Arctic Arrogance takes a step forward off his Sleepy Hollow, he just might have a little bit of a tactical edge. But Tuskegee Airmen really gives off the look of a horse that runs to his pedigree. He's got kind of a bottomless pedigree and a style that makes him really attractive at a mile and an eighth. With Sayas on, of course, I mean, it might look like he's under a bit of a ride from a half mile out. That's just Luis's look. But this is a horse who really, really should relish that ninth furlong.
All right. How about the girls?
You know, I'd love to try and take a shot against Julia Shining. Yeah. But I just wish there was another horse in there that you could really take to, because the thing about her is that, you know, it might not be fast, it might not be pretty, but you know she's going to really love the added ground. And I went back and watched the replay of her debut a couple of times, from which Positano Sunset has now come back and broken her maiden next time out. She ran really well, you know, to be as sort of goofy and uninterested as she was in the first furlong, to really figure it out around the turn. And, you know, it's the same situation that I was just referencing, where Saez is such a, you know, he uses his upper body so much, where you watch a guy like Irev who uses his lower body so much, and you just see Saez pumping away and you're like, this horse is going absolutely nowhere. And all of a sudden she just starts gathering everybody in, and she has that long stride, a lot like her full sister Malathad. You know, the horse really who I'd probably take the best chance with in terms of maybe sneaking into the exacta is Affirmative Lady, who I think will really, really benefit from the added ground. This is a very un-Graham Motion-like move. And the fact that he's willing to try her here, to me, really leads me to believe that he wants distance for her. She's bred for distance. So I'm probably just going to one punch the exacta here. I think there's maybe a slight chance the Tribal Queen can hang around for a piece. But, boy, she's got to run a lot better than she did last time.
Well, the horse that and Dave brought this point out, and I'm glad he did. And you brought up Butchie Reed earlier, and I had Butchie Monday. Foggy Knight is the only horse in this field that's been two turns.
That is a fact. She broke her maiden a mile and 70 at Parks. I think that's notable. And she came back and ran fine in the Tempted. I guess they don't want to try the distance with the winner of the Tempted, who's not back in here. I think it just comes down to a distance thing. You know, it boils down to how quickly and at what point in this race Julia Shining starts to apply pressure to everybody else, especially everybody on the front end. Because if you're going to have to withstand, you know, furlong after furlong of her breathing down your neck, you're not going to hold up, right? It's going to be these horses like her and Malathad and a lot of these Pletcher horses, Mo Donegal, that are just so, you know, distance oriented. The sooner they engage you, the quicker you capitulate, because they've got so much stamina. So it'll be interesting to see how that part of it shakes out. And I think if you do see Tribal Queen get a little bit of an aggressive ride, I know that sounds idiotic given that Cancela's on her, but you kind of have to figure she has to be forwardly placed. And I think that could make sure that things are quick enough to set up Julia Shining getting there early.
Well, and I brought up Tribal Queen with Dave, and he says there's a chance that Tony Dutrow's coming out.
Well, that would be no surprise. There's probably a chance that Affirmative Lady will come out, because Graham Motion likes to scratch too. So,
let me ask you about are you finished with the card?
Just about, yeah.
Did you look at the tenth? Because it, for those that are going to play, going to play a serious pick five attempt, the nightcap is not easy.
No, it's not. And it's funny, they actually ended this card with the Cigar Mile multiple times in recent years and opted not to this year. You know, I was this is a really tough race. I don't have a particularly strong opinion at this point. I am a little concerned about what's going to happen pace-wise. I think Be the Boss is interesting going from the mile back to 7/8, because he can be forwardly placed. He seems to have really gotten good in recent starts. I bet Royal Trist last time out. I wish he would leave this guy at home, this rider. He's, you know, he glued him to the rail last week, and I don't really know if the rail was a problem that day, so I shouldn't hold it against him too badly. This would be a really interesting horse on the cutback again, going to 7 furlongs, but I just don't have enough confidence that he's going to get the kind of pace he needs to really make any kind of influence late. Skylander ran so well two starts back, first time on the dirt off the claim for Jeffrey Engelhardt, and then he came back and completely flopped. So, you know, I wonder if he might be a candidate to bounce back, and you're going to get a decent price. You're going to get roughly four times what you did last time. So I'm going to cast a wide net here. I'll have my work done later today, and we'll have everything up there for everyone to view and pick apart, because this is a fun way to end the card.
Well, and you know, I'm just noting at 12-1, I'm a little surprised Horacio De Paz is not better off the claim, frankly, just because he wins with such alacrity. But that colloquy catches my eye just because of De Paz. I look at everything he sends out three times.
Yeah, and he took this horse and he gelded him. And, you know, with all due respect to Christophe Clément, if you're not of a certain caliber in Christophe Clément's barn, it feels like you can easily get a little bit lost. And I'm guessing this is a horse who probably didn't have a prime spot at the table. So, yeah, this feels like a horse he could move forward. The one thing about the pods is that, I mean, he may not win at an awfully high percentage off the claim, but his ROIs are always good. I mean, his horses run regardless of their price. So this is a horse that I think you should probably give a second look as well.
Well, and Nick has got to run, because I know you got a bottom of the hour activity. But any, you got a push for today? Any last second Friday action?
Oh man, nothing
special.
That I would probably be too thrilled in betting. I think Curlin's Wisdom will be tough in the eighth. I know he's not going to be a big price, but he's gotten into really good form lately, and he looks like him and Gasoline should probably be 1-2 in there.
Well, and as it happens, Scully made double shot in the ninth, his last second Friday push. So maybe a 7-5 double for the ATR crowd.
There we go.
And, you know, I'm just noticing something about that De Paz claim. Do you remember that dam? That Miss Valentine was a stake horse, the Fleet Alex Bear.
Yeah, I think Waterville Lake. That was for Christophe.
There you go. So yeah. they gave up, but the pause is very dangerous. Nick, I will talk to you next Friday. I'll be at Los Alamitos.
Sounds great, my friend. Looking forward to it.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAM1215, the New York Action, his analysis at In the Money. We're going to make the end run here, 30 minutes. We've got Hammer joining us next, and we'll finish up the morning with Seth Merrow, who has been in the green room, literally. He hasn't taken a shower. He's been in there since Wednesday, waiting for me to bring him forward. thanks, by the way. Yesterday, a big response. I put out the link to Rich Eng's second edition of Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, and everybody responded in a big way. I guess a bunch of orders already, and also the same can be said for John's Thoroughbred Investor's Bible. Hammer, what's your new book? When's your book coming out?
You know what? So, you know, I'm thinking about writing a book, believe it or not.
You said something about that was a loaded question.
So I don't know. I'm going to have to speak to some people that actually do that and figure out a way if I can, you know, get it done slowly. But I have a couple things in mind. So yeah, who knows? I'm fascinated by people that can do that. So that can write stuff, whether it's music or poems or just tell a little story. I'm fascinated by it. So something I've always thought about doing. So it might happen. Who knows?
I love it. I've got me too, actually. I'm trying to put something together. Hammer, I'm going to see you when? Sunday.
Yeah. I'm going to come in Sunday. I was going to come in Saturday, but I'm going to stick to my original plan and come in Sunday. And I'm headed right for the sports book there. Play a little football. Sports betting is legal in Arizona, which is not here in California for most of those states out there that do have it. We don't. So, I mean, even though you obviously can make a bet or two, but I enjoy the live, you know, quote, in studio stuff with people yelling and screaming at the TV. So go over, make a few bets, and then settle in. But yeah, looking forward to it. It's cool. It's chilly. It's drizzling. It's been actually wet here for the past couple of days, a on and off rainstorm. But I'm not down south, so don't worry about the races down there. I don't think this is headed down there, but a welcome, you know, anytime it's, you wake up and it's wet on the ground, it's a good thing because you know your sprinklers, you didn't leave them on because you can't turn them on. So that's never a problem, but it's good. So the weather in Tucson is going to be, I think it's going to rain on Saturday or something, it looked like, but it'll be fine. You know, what do they call it? Chamber of Commerce weather, I think, the rest of the time we're there. So that's good. I tell you, my jaws and cheeks are aching. We went to go see Book of Mormon last night.
Oh, great.
And, I mean, it has renewed. I took my weird story. I got the tickets because I get tickets to everything. I'm, you know, if it comes around, I get it. So we always get first call for stuff. So like 6 months ago, I heard it was coming to town. And so we got tickets and I got two tickets, right, like fourth row dead center for I was to take my daughter because she's never seen it. And lo and behold, she has a friend, Lindsay, had a friend come to town that was just cruising around coming in for a few days. And, you know, Gina goes, well, you know, you got to get a ticket for Riley. And I go, yeah, I guess, you know, I mean, not I guess. Yeah, I was like, oh, darn. So I said, you know, go on and check it out. And I'm going to believe this. There was one seat in a section where we were sitting right next to our seat. I mean, it was like unbelievable. So we sat there and I had told Lindsay, she goes, what's the big deal? I said, this is my favorite, thing that, you know, it's better. I like it better than Jersey Boys. I said, I've seen it 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times and I haven't seen it in a while. I said, just sit there. And it was, I'm telling you, it was a flawless performance. It was just so good. And anybody that's never seen Book of Mormon, you got to see it. It's just full of energy. So literally my jaws are still, you know, how that goes when you're laughing and smiling for 2.5 hours, you just can't, you can't beat it. So that was fun. And those of us that a little superstitious here and, you know, Gina goes, well, we got to see this couple. And I said, get the darn seat. I said, this is like a turnaround because I've been having not a bad week, but a tough week working on some other stuff. I go, this is it. I go, you know, everything's going to be great from here on out. So those little things that turn things around. So it's all good here and, you know, coming off of that. But anyway, like I said, yeah, I know you've seen it numerous times, but I mean, it's just
my brother's the press agent for it nationally and on Broadway. He it's sort of the engine on his on my brother's train. He almost basically founded his business. He founded the press room on Book of Mormon.
Well, then that train's going to keep on going for a long
exactly.
It's
the chorus line in Black Jackets.
I was a little worried, you know, if they were going to try and change something, you know, with this, you know, woke culture we're in. And, you know, it's a little, it pushes a little boundaries here and there, all in good humor. And they didn't. And it was just great. So anyway, but enough of that. I just was looking forward to it. And I was hoping I got out of there, you know, the two girls. And I'm looking at it, big smiles, and he's like, "Oh my gosh, this was fantastic!" I said, "Yeah, good. It was." So good. You know, Dad's right every once in a while.
Yeah.
And we got to, you know, hey, the World Cup's over, right? We beat Iran. See you later. It's all gravy, gravy after that. So that was fun. And I got to tell you, I think I mentioned it last week, when you're watching these soccer games, put it on Telemundo and listen to them in Spanish. So much more action. I tell you, it's unbelievable. You know, they go, "Oh, that guy's on there," but it makes you watch more. And it's not eight guys talking; it's one guy doing the game. And anyway, if people think I'm kidding, and then they come over and I got the game on in soccer, and I go, "Wow, this is not bad." You know what it's like? It's like eating ice cream with a fork.
This is a funny discussion. Who do we have this with Lenny Shulman?
With Lenny Shulman. And you know what? If you really want to go, I gotta kind of have a. We had a Larry David moment. We had a Seinfeld moment earlier in the week, and I know I'm getting off course, but people have picked enough horses. So, or as I said, I'll go to anything. So earlier in the week, we had tickets to Mannheim Steamroller.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So that's that was a new one. That one came on, so I got tickets. So Gina and I went. And once again, as a matter of fact, we were in the fourth row again. It was the Pasadena Civic. And we didn't know what to expect. You know, Christmas music, let's turn on the charm or whatever. So we get in. And, you know, it's kind of a little goofy looking, goofy audience, different audience, whatever. We sit down. And strangely enough, halfway into the first song, independently, we knew we were leaving at halftime. Okay. Gene and we have no problem, you know, leaving things or walking out of things at time. But, we're sitting in the fourth row and we couldn't. It's like, I'm not going to get up and leave. And so it was just really hokey and these 1970 videos in the background and kind of robotic performances and a weird, it wasn't us. And halfway through the thing, I said, I'm going to take a video of this. I got to check it out. I'm sneaking out my camera and I hit the button and a flashlight comes on. And it's like, oh, I can't get that darn thing off. And it's running all over. So we're kind of start laughing. And it was like, it reminded us of the Pez deal with Elaine. On Seinfeld, where Jerry takes the Pezkin thing out during the piano concert, and we couldn't stop laughing. We're like in the fourth row here; people are listening. We couldn't stop laughing, and it was so funny. And then we're waiting for the end of the first half, and lo and behold, they come on, and the guy goes, "And check your Q code and buy some." They're hawking stuff in the middle of the concert. It was really, I don't know, it was really kind of hokey. We hit the ground running and took off and went to the bar for the rest of the show. But it was pretty funny. So anyway, that's our entertainment week here in L.A. That, you know, and I said something earlier, for as much as they try to mess this city up somehow, eventually it does pay dividends and there's things to do and the weather's usually nice. And so anyway. It's not that bad. So we're heading. Let's talk about the calendar.
There you go. There you go. There's your Seinfeld theme.
Oh, and, you know, for those of you who can do it, of course, we came home and I went right to the Pez. It's season 3, show 14, by the way, is the Pez episode. We watched that, and I mean, it's just classic. Gina played a great Elaine. Let's go over the calendar real quick.
Yes.
We opened up the calendar giveaway again last week, for those of you who missed it. We'll keep this thing going. But so we're giving away the Kentucky Downs calendar, which oddly enough, Steve, as you know, we got a tweet from one of the listeners.
Two listeners spotted it.
Two listeners. Yes. And one of them, Steve, was one of them. And he put a picture up and said, what's wrong with this calendar? It was a picture of November, the month of November from the Oakland calendar we gave away last year. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't have one up here. I said, well, let's check it out. You go online. I'm thinking to myself, well, there's really only one thing that can be wrong with a calendar. And sure enough, they had 31 days in November, right? November 31st. And, mistakes were made. But I thought that was pretty funny as it went around. And, you know, someone had commented to me, like, well, what about the people who had stuff planned for that day? You know, imagine writing on your calendar. You had a doctor's appointment on November 31st, but anyway, it's pretty funny. I did get the Kentucky calendar, some of them in the mail yesterday, and
wow.
I checked. First thing I went to was November, just to make sure. And so then we had a little bit of an extra day last year, but next year there's 30 days in the Kentucky calendar, so that's good. But so if you want a calendar, it's our usual giveaway here that Steve and I do. We want you to send a picture of a concert or a sporting event that you've been to, you know, throughout your lifetime. The older, the better, I said, but, it doesn't have to be a racetrack, like you said. And you know, any concert from, you know, your grandkids' piano, you know, recital to the Super Bowl, anything you want. I haven't opened up a whole lot of them, but a couple of my hits are pretty interesting. So, you know, make it fun. So send that picture in to one of two email sites, which is Kentucky Downs Calendar at yahoo.com, spelled out Kentucky Downs calendar, or you can take the easy way and just go KY, Kentucky abbreviated, KY Downs calendar at Yahoo. So send us a picture. Please put calendar in the subject line. That way when I'm going through all the spam, I don't accidentally delete it. And get them in and tell us a little tale about, you know, your picture. And we'll start getting those calendars out. As soon as I get the envelopes here, we can start addressing early and we'll get them out to you. And once again, it's a, you know, it's a really cool calendar. Kentucky Downs with great shots by Grace Clark and Cody Photography and a couple other people in there. And anyway, I think you'll enjoy it. So we will keep that. That's one tradition that is going to keep on rolling. Right, Steve?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not gonna, even if we gotta go down, if I gotta go down to Hallmark and, you know.
And gather, we can gather up, start swiping them out of pharmacies.
Exactly. Or waiting till the year's over and go and get, you know, the $1.99 ones, type of thing. So, but no, this thing is gonna go on. And like I said, once again, we thank Kentucky Downs for stepping up for going on this year. But we got some racing still. I mean, real quick, they want to go through some of the races down there at Del Mar. And like I said, it is, you know, rainy, sprinkly, drizzly up here. But I checked the weekend down south. It looks like it's going to be just fine. So don't fret about that as you worry about it, because it's the Turf Festival that, you know, Del Mar took over and have really kind of continued the top flight racing. You know, this the five races this weekend, I'm telling you, woo, I spent a lot of time on it. Don't you hate that when you spend a lot of time in a race, you come away with, oh, geez, I don't know. So a lot of you, if you're writing some of these races, you're gonna definitely get paid. I will say one thing when you're looking at turf racing down here in the States, the first thing you want to look at is Phil D'Amato. And the second thing you want to look at is Pratt, as he's back in town, you know, riding the cards, for these. And, you know, they win their fair share of these. So as a default, if you're having trouble, you can't go wrong, hooking up with one of those guys. The Jimmy Durante is the first race, or the fifth race on Saturday, the first stake of the weekend, and it's as mumbled as you can get. The Stormy Liberal is the fifth race, going 5/8 on the turf, named after the Breeders' Cup winner, of course. And I did just what I talked about. I defaulted after looking at some of these horses. You know, normally at Del Mar, the last few years, not so much this year, if you found a speed horse in the one, two or three post positions, you just put your money down and walked away. Not so much, as there is a couple of horses like that, Laneway and D'Amato's new horse, Rebel Posse. I settled on another D'Amato that doesn't quite have the red lights yet going off, but Turn on the Jets, number 7.
Yeah.
Has quietly in allowance races run with a lot of these horses. And I try to get a little bit of a price. He's 5-1. And I mean, whoever you jump on here, you're going to get a price. But I ended up with him after doing the work. And so I ended up with 7-2-3-10 in there. I looked at Sumter a little bit with Pratt on the outside. I don't know. You never know. They're going to get hung wide in that short run of the first turn. I might have moved him up a little bit. He had a unsuccessful run out to Kentucky Downs, but the fact that they thought enough to ship him out there gives you a little bit more hope. Speed type, but I'm worried he's going to be carried wide. But Pratt, you know, rides his course great. So that's who I ended up with in that race. The next one is the Jimmy Durante, and you got 12. 2-year-old fillies going a mile, and the outside post here, not too worried about it, but more so with 2-year-olds than others. Maybe they can't handle it as well. I zeroed in on a Phil D'Amato here just because of the best is yet to be, which kind of goes with the movie theme of the Hollywood deal. He's or excuse me, she's, you know, looks as good as the rest of them. I like the fact that she was favored in a similar race, stake race in the summertime. It was a 2-to-1 favorite. Yeah, it didn't, it was off slow. Didn't really have the greatest of trips. Came back in an allowance race, was favored again, run second. Looked like, you know, took a little bit better to the turf down there at Del Mar. So I ended up on that one as 5-to-1. And then just a scramble afterwards. I mean, I had to pick one on top, and then yeah, I got like 1, 2, 7, 8, 11 underneath. But just a grab bag, and that's what these 2-year-old races are kind of supposed to be. So a good bunch, though. There's 12 of them, and then we had to Saturday's feature, which is the last race, the Hollywood Derby, and I'm going to tell you. You know, Del Mar does things the same way that they have for a long time. I'm going to say this is the first time I've seen them run a feature as the last, at least a grade one, which I'm glad to see them stepping out. I always like to do that. In fact, I went back the first time I did that, which was out, hadn't been done out here for a while, was in 2011 on opening day. It was, I had to pull the chart out. The Malibu, we ran the Malibu was the last race. The Factor was the winner of that race. And I remember, you know, kind of getting a little heat, like, what are you doing? I said, hey, you go to a boxing match. The feature's the last race. What? Let's do it. And I remember going down to the paddock in kind of darkish, you know, dusk type thing weather in the last race. And they were 5 deep in there. And it was like, wow, this is great. You know, we kept them there till the end. And so I've seen it done a lot more, and they would always, oh, run the feature as the last, run the feature as the last. And you can't really plan on it. The card has to fit right in where the rest of the, you know, the supporting races, the, you know, the 1 to 3 or 4 races before that are good. And then you can put that thing as the last and try and keep them there. But I kudos to Del Mar for finally stepping out and doing that. But this is a good race, a lot of shippers, and, you know, that just adds to the flow. Shug coming out, you know, bringing a beach chair with him. He doesn't come to Del Mar too often, so take note of that. Grand Motion, we talked about last show. I think he shipped 8 or 10 horses out here, so he has the advantage, especially with his charge, Speaking Scout on the outside. He's been here. He ran in the Twilight Derby, and people think that I named that race after the movie. Nope, it was the Twilight Derby because it's the next to the last Derby here is the Twilight. And this is the last Derby, the Hollywood Derby. But Speaking Stout came out here. He ran very, very good in that event. And, you know, I'm not so worried about the outside post with these guys. And I actually ended up picking him on top, Speaking Scout, just because of the lack of travel. Wit's in here. And, you know, obviously could take this thing. I'm a little worried about the mile and eighth. I mean, Todd knows obviously what he's doing here. You know, he's going to be the favorite. He has the best figs without a doubt going in here, but I'd still give it a little bit of a shade to the California figs. I don't think they're quite as, I don't know. They just don't seem to be as low as equal times. The East Coast fig is always lower. So, Shug's horse has got a big play here, Celestial City. The winner that aforementioned Twilight Derby, Cabo Spirits on the rail, going to sit a nice trip for George Papa Perdomo. But once again, you're going to get paid in here. You know, I come up with the 10 horse, the 10-3-1-4-7. You know, I came close to picking that 4 horse, that win type. From the Peter Miller barn, coming out of a little tune-up in the Let It Ride Stakes, a restricted stake down here, also ran well in the Twilight Derby, so he could be a bit of a look at as a price. Did you check that race out, Steve? You look at?
Well, I had the same exact question and about Wit, and just not wanting to take the short number. I won't be surprised if he wins, but I had a funny horse in here, and so did. I'm glad that. Brad talked about Spycatcher of Mark Glatz, the maiden who's, you know, the maiden with something extra. But War at Sea, I'm intrigued by, because if he didn't stumble in that Del Mar Derby, he might be on a 4-race win streak. And I think he's going to get a little lost on the board even. I think he might even drift up toward 8-to-1. So I'm interested in Ellis and War at Sea a little bit.
Why not? get Ron off the bench here and have him come back. Obviously, he's been waiting and pointing for this place, this spot for a little bit. He skipped the race at Santa Anita, the Twilight Derby, and so he's sitting on go here. Mike Smith gets aboard. Can't knock it at all. And let's not forget, I mean, this race has produced has a lot of nice horses. I just looked up before we got on. Beyond Brilliant last year, Domestic Spending won this race, Raging Bull won this race. If you go back to 2014, California Chrome got his grade one turf victory in this spot here too. So this is a real race and check it out. Good spot. Sunday, two races to go. The Cecil B. DeMille and much like the female version, the two-year-olds going a mile, just there's nine of them, you throw a blanket over them. I couldn't really separate them. I just went with the horse with the stake experience, Bob Baffert's horse, Speedboat Beach. Obviously has a good percentage of stretching him out, not necessarily stretching him out on the turf, but Pratt gets on. And we'll go with that one. The Matriarch, a lot of good winners there. I know you got to get Seth on. So let's break that down to the 7, 8, 9, Regal Glory, Wanataka, and Pizza Bianca. So there you go. Say hi to Seth. We'll see you in a couple of days in Arizona, and fly safe.
You too. And are you driving? What did you decide?
I am going to fly. This time of year, you need every hour you can get, and rather than spending 8-10 hours on the road, I'll fly in, rent the car, and fly back. So taking the easy way.
I'll see you Sunday.
Very good.
One more time, Kentucky Downs calendar at yahoo.com. All right? So get that out, and we'll remind you the next 3 weeks plus, and we'll be together with Hammer at the symposium. Looking forward to it. All right. Looking forward to closing out the week with Seth Merrow. He's been waiting. He's been so patient. We couldn't end the week without a visit from Seth. And Seth's been listening. So he knows exactly where we stood. You've been having your finger on the pulse.
I looked at you tweeted out this morning the lineup, and I thought, I'm not fitting in that lineup. It's a jam-packed show. I'm going to be in the green room all weekend long until next Wednesday.
Well, next Wednesday I'll be at the symposium, so it might not have been room for you then either. So
that's true. When you're on the trips, there's always the live guests. So I'm always when that happens, I'm always thinking, probably not going to make it in here.
Well, but then when we're at Saratoga, you are the live guest.
Yeah. I'm not complaining. I'm happy. I like listening to the live guests on the show, so I'm all for it.
There you go. Well, I reached. It's funny because we had plenty to talk about, and that started on Wednesday, and I expected to talk to you because I had asked you about the situation involving the. Just something outside just caught my eye. The OTB scenario with. Specifically with Turfway and about betting, you and I and Dick Powell, we were all kind of powwowing, and then I got some help. I got some help from Joe Longo too about it. He sent me documentation, Seth. I should forward that to you. You'll find it interesting if you like reading stereo instructions. If I can pull a line from Beetlejuice, the whole backstory of why poor people in New York, we can't bet on Palm Sunday or Easter. Well, now we can bet Palm Sunday.
That was and still is bizarre on Easter. And I have no problem if a track decides they want to take off a holiday like that and give some time off to some of the employees or whatever, but that it's state mandated. And it's, again, it's just a huge anachronism that went back, years and years, decades ago. And then it just became an anachronism because now, as you say, they changed the Palm Sunday thing, but you still can't bet horse racing on Easter. But the fact of the matter is now you can go to your local convenience store and buy as many lottery tickets as you want. You can go to all the racinos in the state and bet as much as. So the law at this point is just completely pointless.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. The whole thing is bizarre. blue laws. I mean, there's still states with blue laws. You can't buy beer until noon on a Sunday. I mean, come on, stop with that. All right, what we've only got a couple of minutes. I still shortchanged you. What do you got? Well, you got some action.
I have a small ticket on that, the pick four today at Aqua. I would have done that carryover on the pick five at Gulfstream, but man, I jumped in Gulfstream yesterday for the first time in a while. I was treading, well, like everybody. That's why there's the pick five carryover. So I just have a small ticket on the pick four at Aqua. And then maybe I'll toss out what I think is a long shot tomorrow at Tampa. Tampa's fun tomorrow. It's kind of the West Coast of Florida Stars of Tomorrow with the 2-year-olds.
Well,
and
good.
I have a couple ideas there. But last weekend at church, I love the 2-year-old races. And I saw you tweeted out that Marty had the horse in the last race. I had that horse too. I had a good day Saturday at Churchill. Because, again, I like the 2-year-olds. But just quickly, you get a small ticket at Aqueduct. I think it looks like it's going to play out pretty logically. Sixth race, I went 5-1, Patty H and Secret Love. I'm going to give a little edge to Patty H coming off the nice try last time. Led most of the way and got caught, but I think may take him all the way today. But if not, Secret Love may be the one that upsets the apple cart. I'll go too deep again in the 7th, the 8th, and the 5. Secret Thunder, couple of tries so far. They've been kind of mediocre, but against this field, I think they may be good enough. Drops down. We're 10 flat before this auction. And a couple of interesting siblings. One sibling called Your Secret Safe. Took 9 starts to win, but in those 9 starts had the win 4 seconds and a couple thirds. Another sibling called Secret Czar that won in the second start of the career. So I thought there was some win early that the horse hasn't lived up to, but maybe the drop today does. So Lars is a firster. 10.1 before the auction. I thought that was an interesting perhaps alternative. So again, I'm 2 deep there, 8-5 in the 8th race. I'll go 2 deep again with the 9 and the 7. Going to use turn my page here. The 2 and the 7. Excuse me, I said the 9. The 2 and the 7. Gasoline on top. Fletcher Runner showed some promise so far earlier in the career. Ran third last time, but the winner came back to win an allowance optional claimer by 5. I thought that maybe flattered Gasoline a little bit. And then Curlin's Wisdom ran second, beat Parisi, who ran a good near miss second in Discovery last weekend. So again, you know, it's a small ticket. I think these are kind of obvious. I think it's going to play out that way. 2-7 in that race. And then in the finale, I'll go 11-3-10. Ninth race, we'll put the 11 on top. Durkin's Call off the claim for Charlie Baker. We'll use Quick Return in there as well. Nice win, too, back claimed out of that. They got a little ambitious in the follow-up. I think the horse gets back to the comfort zone today. And then toss in the number 10, Gemography, who I think could be a little player, too, for Rudy Rodriguez. So 11-3-10 in that final. Again, just a small ticket, but it seems like it's going to play out kind of logically there.
Seth, we'll talk to you next week from either Arizona or from Los Alamitos.
Sounds good. Sixth race at Tampa tomorrow. He's connected, I think, could be a good price. So sixth race, number 4, he's connected, Tampa 6.
Outstanding. Seth Merrow, everybody, to wrap up a fun week. And we'll talk to you from Arizona on Monday. Thanks to Seth and Hammer, Nick Tamaro, James Scully, Dave Grenig, Marcus Hirsch, Callie Francois, Scott Shapiro, Brad Free. I'll probably do New York for tomorrow. I'm not sure. Maybe Del Mar. Anyway, I'll do something on my way out west. And I'll talk to you Monday from the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program Symposium.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and